We do not know that much about Tiberius Julius Alexander, but we do know that he joined Titus in assaulting the sacred city of his own ancestors. And we know that if he wished to succeed in Rome, as he clearly did, what he would have to willingly embrace is the centrality of the power of Rome. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 90, Titus's Jewish General. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. Who is the worst Jew in Jewish history? Who, to put it slightly differently, wreaked the most havoc on the embodiment of Jewish ideals, hopes, and aspirations? In reviewing the story of the Jews in the ancient and classical world, several candidates might occur to us. There is, for example, Ataliah the usurper, daughter of the house of Ahav, who slaughtered the descendants of the Davidic dynasty, including her own grandchildren. But Ataliah failed in her aim. As we have seen, one Davidic heir was saved, and the dreams of David lived on. I do not know who the worst Jew in Jewish history was, but I can say that there was one Jew in the classical world who was intimately involved in the assault on Jerusalem by the Romans, which had catastrophic consequences for the next many centuries of Jewish life. The man to whom I refer is Tiberius Julius Alexander, a Jew who was nothing less than Titus's chief of staff, apparently the second in command during the final Roman conquest of 70 CE. And this man was not only a Jew, but a member of one of the most distinguished and well-known Jewish families of the diaspora. Today, his name is virtually unknown to most Jews, and to learn about him is a bit shocking, but the fact that he existed tells us a great deal about the Roman world and the horrific choices that Tiberius Alexander may have made in leading the attack on his own people. In the end, also allows us, upon reflection, to find inspiration in our realization of his failure and in the miracle of Jewish resurrection in our time. Historian Martin Goodman gives us the biography of the man whose story we tell today. Quote, Tiberius Alexander was in fact the son of one of the most prominent members of the Alexandrian Jewish community. His father Marcus, who had held a powerful administrative role for Rome as alabarch, a position which probably involved superintendence of customs collection on the Arabian side of the Nile, was famous for his gift of gilded gates to the Jerusalem temple. He was the benefactor whose loan to Agrippa I in the mid-30s CE had enabled the Jewish king to restart his political career in Rome. Tiberius's brother, also called Marcus like his father, had been married to Agrippa's daughter, the Jewish princess Berenice. His uncle was Philo, the great Jewish philosopher who had been one of the leaders of the embassy sent to the emperor Gaius in 40 CE to plead on behalf of the Jews of Alexandria. Tiberius Alexander had himself been sent in 46 by Claudius as governor of Judea, presumably on the assumption that his Jewish background would give him an advantage in ruling over Jerusalem, as it had done for his brother's father-in-law, Agrippa I, end quote. This, then, is the distinguished Jewish background of Tiberius Alexander. And now that we know something about his family and his father's donation to the temple in Jerusalem, we can also point out Josephus's important biographical note about this man who had such success in Roman military and political life. Josephus, writing about Tiberius Alexander, tells us that unlike his family, quote, he did not continue in the religion of his country, end quote. Now, as historians note, Josephus does not tell us what exactly he meant by this. Did Tiberius Alexander embrace pagan practices? Did he merely cease observance of all that marked him as a Jew? Josephus does not say. But in abandoning Jewish identity, Tiberius Alexander set himself on a path that ultimately made him, as others have noted, one of the highest-ranking Jewish military figures in the history of the world. Decades after serving as governor of Judea, Tiberius Alexander took up a similar position in Alexandria, where, according to Josephus, his ordering of Roman legions to act against the Jewish community there led to many Jewish deaths. Then, in 69 CE, known as the Year of Four Emperors, Tiberius Alexander pledged his own loyalty to Vespasian in the latter's quest for the throne and ordered his legions in Egypt to do the same. As Vespasian prepared to depart for Rome, he, Vespasian, chose at this point to free Josephus from the captivity in which he had been held in the Roman camp, saying of Josephus, at least according to Josephus, that, quote, it is a shameful thing that this man who hath foretold my coming to the empire beforehand and been the minister of a divine message to me should still be retained in the condition of a captive or prisoner. Vespasian placed his son Titus in charge of the campaign against Judea and Jerusalem, and Titus needed someone to take his own place. And so he, Titus, turned to the Egyptian Jew who had been so loyal to Titus's family. Writing of Titus, Josephus tells us, quote, "So there came Tiberius Alexander, who was a friend of his, most valuable, both for his goodwill to him and for his prudence. He had formerly been governor of Alexandria, but was now thought worthy to be general of the army. The reason of this was that he had been the first to encourage Vespasian very lately to accept this his new dominion and joined himself to him with great fidelity when things were uncertain and fortune had not yet declared for him. He also followed Titus as a counselor, very useful to him in this war, both by his age and skill in such affairs." End quote. Thus it was that Titus appointed a Jew as the man to help him oversee the conquest of Jerusalem. And, as Josephus reflects, apparently, this Jew, Tiberius Alexander, was very, quote-unquote, useful to Titus in this aim. In reflecting on this, we must first ponder what Tiberius Alexander's own rise through the ranks tells us about the empire. Historian Martin Goodman notes that, in the Roman hegemony over a vast amount of peoples, many non-Romans' success in achieving elevation happened through their doing as the Romans did. Goodman writes as follows, quote, "The main impulse to acceptance of Roman mores by provincials thus came not through imposition from above, but as a result of the ambitions of the provincials themselves. The Roman elite was remarkably willing to accept into its ranks capable men of almost any background, provided that they lived in a Roman way." And Goodman adds that a telling omission in the description by the Roman senator Tacitus of Tiberius Julius Alexander, prefect of Egypt in the 60s CE and in due course chief of staff to the future emperor Titus during his prosecution of the siege of Jerusalem in 70, is any mention of his Jewish origin, end quote. Meaning Tiberius Alexander had become entirely assimilated into Roman culture. Goodman's point is that in achieving such social status in the empire, the man who became Titus's chief of staff needed only to have become entirely Roman in attitude and outlook, or as Goodman further puts it, quote, "Tiberius Alexander's origins as a Jew were apparently irrelevant. His career exemplified the willingness of the Roman elite to ignore the ethnic and racial origins of provincials who sought to be treated as Roman, provided only that the individual in question adopted Roman customs in full," end quote. Adopting Roman customs in full, Goodman further writes, is exactly what most Jews did not wish to do. And as he further points out in his book, Rome and Jerusalem, one of the deep dividing points between the Romans and the Jews was the central question of this podcast. What is the most important city in the world? To the Jews of Judea and to faithful Jews throughout the world, there could only be one answer to this question. We have seen that during the Second Temple period, there were several sects of Jews in Judea, Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, divided over important doctrinal issues, such as the nature of the law, spiritual existence, free will. But, as Goodman further adds, quote, "One assumption shared by all types of Jew was that Jerusalem was the ideal sanctuary for the worship of God," end quote. And this, as he further explains, is why another religious sect in Judea at the time, the Samaritans, did not see themselves as Jews. In insisting that Mount Gerizim, rather than Mount Moriah, was where the laws of the Bible should be practiced and preached, the Samaritans understood that they embodied an entirely different faith. Or, as Goodman adds, quote, "acceptance of the preeminence of Jerusalem was an essential part of being a Jew," end quote. And, as Goodman further explains, it was the preeminence of Jerusalem that a true Roman in culture and affect could not accept. Goodman writes as follows, quote, "In a different way, the city of Rome was as central to Roman identity as Jerusalem was for Jews. Romans were to be found all over the empire in the first century CE, but what mattered to them above all were events in the city, in Rome itself. On a political level, emperors demonstrated the centrality of the city by parading there, before the Senate and people, the public face of their power, and through investing much of the surplus wealth of empire in the glorification of the city. The city's population was privileged. Rome was the capital of the world," end quote. So, Rome versus Jerusalem. This was one of the central dividing points in the empire between Jews and many others. Jews in the empire embodied one people, one faith that could not acknowledge Rome's centrality on earth. And in crushing Jerusalem, the Romans sought to show the world how important Rome was, For the Romans, the point was to establish the preeminence of Rome's might, or as Goodman further puts it, quote, "The centrality of Rome in this Roman geography was contingent on the fact of Roman power. The centrality of Jerusalem for Jews, by contrast, was a fact of religious certainty," end quote. It was this Roman power that the Jew Tiberius Alexander served, and it was to the Jewish religion that Tiberius Alexander helped Titus deliver such a terrible blow. But this blow was not, as we will continue to tell throughout this year, a fatal one. Judaism would survive, thrive, endure, and Jews would return to Jerusalem. The same endurance cannot be found in the story of the culture and beliefs of that other city, ancient Rome. We do not know that much about Tiberius Julius Alexander, but we do know that he joined Titus in assaulting the sacred city of his own ancestors. And we know that if he wished to succeed in Rome, as he clearly did, what he would have to willingly embrace is the centrality of the power of Rome. And that, for him, in the decade of 60 to 70 CE, meant helping to crush the aspirations and indeed the bodies of countless members of his own people, of adherence to the faith into which he was born. Central to being fully Roman was acknowledging the centrality of Rome. Central to being Jewish was acknowledging the centrality of Jerusalem. And he clearly chose the former over the latter. As terrible as this is in retrospect, there is one way of pondering the awful career of Tiberius Alexander that can give us inspiration. Let us imagine for a moment Titus's Jewish chief of staff standing at the helm of one of the most mighty armies on earth, besieging the sacred city, knowing that its defeat would pave the path to his own success. And indeed, a scrap of papyrus indicates, as historians point out, that Tiberius Alexander may later have become the prefect of the Praetorian Guard in Rome itself. But what this Jewish chief of staff to Titus did not guess in 70 CE was that if the centrality of Rome was contingent on its power, that power would wane. The centrality of Jerusalem, in contrast, was first and foremost contingent on faith, a faith which endured even in the midst of persecution and which would stay centered on Jerusalem. Imagine informing this Jewish general of Titus that soon Roman paganism would disappear and that ideas contained in the Bible of the Jews would spread around the world. Imagine telling him that thousands of years after he lived, the Roman Forum would be in ruins and a Jewish Jerusalem would stand, and that very few, only some historians, those interested in ancient Rome, and a rabbi on a podcast would talk about the Jew who served Titus in the assault on Jerusalem. In his abandonment of his father's faith, and in his joining Titus, Tiberius Alexander made an historical bet on Rome over Jerusalem, on Rome's power over Jerusalem's faith. He bet wrong. We, however, can look back on the life of this Jew from the past and find inspiration in the Jewish endurance throughout the ages and in the miracles of the age in which we live. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.